Greetings, friends. It's been far too long. I know the weather is ghastly and the roads are treacherous, but I'm so glad you could join us this evening. Have a drink. Warm yourself by the fire. Let's discuss real and genuine tales of terror. The strange and bizarre, myths and legends, haunted histories and ghost sightings, cursed objects, cryptids and UFO abductions, secret societies, the occult, and dark conspiracy. Let's discuss all of these things. But first, please have a seat in the haunted chair. In this episode of The Haunted Chair, 2023 is upon us. Many people are excited, fearful, or a combination of the two, anticipating what the new year may bring, or intent on implementing radical changes in their lifestyle or character to bring about positive results. This desire and ritual has its roots in antiquity, and oftentimes a cult or mythological tradition. Many ancient cultures link the new year to the original creation of order out of chaos, and the recreation of the universe yet again to eliminate the evil of the previous year. We will delve into some of these beliefs and rituals, and how they may relate to the warding of ghosts or evil spirits. In other recent haunted news, a 3,500-year-old Babylonian tablet just might portray the earliest known depiction of a ghost. Irving Finkel is a curator in the London Museum's Middle Eastern department, and he maintains that the tablet, when viewed from above under a light, might contain instructions for an exorcist on how to get rid of unwanted spirits. Is it an early script for a Mesopotamian Ghostbuster film? If you are inclined to believe in a world beyond that of the living, the potential for haunted or cursed locations in the U.S. almost becomes too numerous to catalog or research. When you think about it, the chances of living directly on top of a location where a body was buried or where a tragic event occurred seems more logical than not. However, in this episode, we'll briefly touch on what have been identified as the most haunted locations and then do an in-depth investigation in future episodes. These include the Waverly Hills Sanatorium in West Virginia, the horrors in the New Jersey Pine Barrens, the ghosts of Savannah, Georgia, and the St. Augustine Lighthouse. Many ancient cultures conceived of the arrival of the new year as the recreation of the cosmos in order to sweep away the chaos and disorder of the previous year. Mircea Eliade, a Romanian historian of religion and University of Chicago professor, called this the myth of eternal return, in which the various rituals attempted to replicate in the experience of the participants this recreation and sweeping away. New Year's rituals included such things as designating a scapegoat to carry away the evil that had manifested in the community during the old year, the sweeping and cleaning of temples and statues, the use of fire, incense, or loud noise, the painting of doors with certain unguents or potions, or the hanging of certain plants or herbs to keep diabolical elements at bay. A few cultural examples. In Egypt, the celebration was religious, symbolic, and royal, and based on the annual emergence of the land from floodwaters tied to the creation myth, in which the primal mound emerged from the primordial waters of chaos. The Koyak Festival was held in the days before New Year's, in which Osiris was interred underground. Then a Jed pillar was put up, symbolic of the resurrection and growing vegetation. This ensured the prosperity of Egypt during the coming year. There was also the celebration of new beginnings in a festival called Wepet Renpet, translating to the opening of the year, and discoveries at the Temple of Mut indicate that, during the reign of Hatshepsut, the first month of the year included a festival of drunkenness. This festival was related to the myth of Sekhmet, the war goddess, who planned to kill all of humanity before the sun god Ra tricked her into drinking herself unconscious. During this time, Egyptians would celebrate with revelry, sex, music, and prodigious amounts of beer. In Babylon, New Year's was celebrated close to the spring equinox during the Akitu festival, and the first days were spent in various scapegoat and purification rituals, while their creator god Marduk was banished to underground realms of darkness, chaos, and death. Marduk was then released to fight the chaos creature Tiamat and restored to his throne, where he would decree destinies for the new year. The king would also participate in a humiliation and restoration ritual so that his dominion was purified and renewed. Chinese New Year is one of the oldest traditions and is believed to have originated approximately 3 millennia ago during the Shang Dynasty. The holiday centers around celebrating new beginnings of the spring planting season. However, according to one account, there existed once a barbaric and bloodthirsty creature called Nian, which is now the Chinese word for year, which preyed on villages every New Year. To frighten the beast away, the villagers began decorating their homes with burning bamboo, red trimmings, and making loud noises with fireworks, gongs, and other instruments. The tactic worked, and the scaring off of Nian eventually fused into customs still seen today. One of the most interesting traditions for the New Year can be found in Swedish mythology in the ritual known as Orskon, or the Year Walk, which suggests the possibility of divination regarding the coming year only if the walker stringently follows the rules and is able to reach the local churchyard or graveyard. In the ritual, the participant is bidden to walk during the cover of night in winter, far enough from the village to avoid any distracting noise, and only after a day spent in darkness without drink, food, socializing, or telling anyone of your journey. If you can visualize walking through a dark, gloomy forest close to midnight, at a time of year when the veil is thin between worlds and the dead mingled with the living. Even if one is inclined not to believe in the supernatural, there still might be the danger of indigenous hungry wildlife or nefarious human elements to contend with, thus making the journey even more treacherous. According to Swedish folklorist Tommy Kusela, in the book Folk Belief and Traditions of the Supernatural, this form of divination is recorded in documents dating back to the 1600s. However, many records refer to it as ancient, making the origins of the ritual unclear. Cemeteries were particularly active in that walkers told of fresh graves that did not exist before, dead souls dancing, and songs emanating from open graves. Additionally, participants could expect to encounter horrifying creatures such as the brook horse or the huldra. The brook horse appeared as a beautiful ivory stallion with a flowing white mane that would invite children to ride. During the journey, it would lengthen its back to accommodate more and more children, and when it felt it had enough riders, would plunge into a deep, icy body of water, drowning the riders and taking their souls. The huldra was an alluring tree-like nymph purported to be the forest guardian. These creatures would lure people to their homes to either kill them or marry them. Either way, the unfortunate person would never be seen again. Many other creatures did all they could to distract the walker and force them to break the rules, among which were talking, laughing, or being the least bit fearful. 18th century records of failed walks recorded that those who broke the rules sacrificed their sanity, had their heads distorted, lost an eye, or simply vanished forever. The ritual was intended as a solitary one, but participants were permitted to join if they met up as long as they didn't speak. The consequences of breaking the rules was illustrated by former Harper's Magazine editor A.H. Guernsey, as he shared an account in an 1871 article. There's a popular belief that at a certain instant the water of every spring is for a moment turned to wine. One of the pilgrims, happening at this moment to drink from a spring, incautiously exclaimed to his companion, Now the water is wine. Whereupon a voice was heard from the depths. And now your eyes are mine. And the unfortunate man became blind from that instant. The walk was undertaken for the purposes of seeing omens, which were often horrifyingly bleak, but might give information regarding the harvest, marriage, the possibility of war, fire, or who was going to die in the upcoming year. The participants garnered this information by observing visions through a church keyhole, encountering funeral processions, or visiting freshly dug graves. And it often was a portend of the death of the participant. If you simply must know what the new year brings and decide to participate in this ritual, perhaps consider some tape over your mouth, just to be sure. Is a tablet created in Babylon approximately 1500 BCE the earliest known depiction of a ghost? Irving Finkel, curator of the London Museum's Middle Eastern Department and author of the upcoming book The First Ghosts, Most Ancient of Legacies, argues that it is, in fact, the case. The artifact has never been exhibited and was acquired in the 19th century. It is small enough to fit in a person's hand, and at least half of it is missing. But the artifact still contains carefully detailed instructions on getting rid of spirits who have worn out their welcome. The image on the tablet is only visible when viewed from above under a light, and it appears to depict a bad-tempered male ghost being led to the underworld on a rope by a female. The inscription suggests that the solution for removing unwanted male ghosts is to give them a lover. According to Finkel, this ritual would be enacted, I think, in the case of a persistent domestic, probably family ghost who was getting really beyond a joke, and lots of people were being startled and didn't want it to go on any longer. Finkel also states, "It's obviously a male ghost and he's miserable. You can't help but imagine what happened before. Oh God, Uncle Henry's back. Maybe Uncle Henry lost three wives. Something that everybody knew was that the way to get rid of the old bugger was to marry him off." The tablet was found, along with thousands of others, from Babylon, the ancient city in modern-day Iraq, about 60 miles south of Baghdad. It provides insight into what life was like in the wider region of Mesopotamia, and was written in cuneiform. The actual ritual instructs the exorcist to make figurines of a woman and a man, give them specific items such as travel provisions for the man and furniture for the woman, and then bury them together while reciting a spell. The included spell is incomplete, however it requires calling on the sun god Shamash, whose job it was to direct movement of ghosts in the underworld. Finkel maintains that the ritual was a literal, not a symbolic one, and that it was meant to transfer the ghost into the figurine so he could pass to the underworld with the blessings of Shamash. The final line of instruction urges the reader to not look behind you, and Finkel believes this is probably intended as an instruction aimed at the figurines entering the underworld, but entirely possible it is addressed to the one performing the ritual. The illustration was most likely created by a skilled master craftsperson, and the tablet may have been housed in an exorcist library or a temple. Finkel has stated before that ancient Mesopotamians relied on funerary rituals to prohibit the dead from rising, and that ghosts, having been deprived of eternal rest, were generally accepted as objects of sympathy. In addition, however, souls could return as ghosts that manifested themselves as sickness among the living, and doctors at the time called on sufferers to confess any sins that may have called up the dead prior to treating them with spells. Despite his expertise, Finkel has had no personal revelations with anything from beyond the grave and states, "I would like to see a ghost. I've never seen one. It's very annoying to me." There is a region now known as the New Jersey Pine Barrens, and during the colonial period, it was a hub of prosperity and population, being home to paper mills, sawmills, and towns for the people who were so employed. But there was a sharp downturn when coal was discovered in close by Pennsylvania, and people migrated to that region. This left the remains of abandoned ghost towns, and more than a few chilling tales. Among them is the appearance of the spirit of pirate Captain William Kidd, who is sometimes spotted in New Jersey's Barnegat Bay, as well as a ghostly black shuck said to roam the beaches and the forests of the coastline. However, the most infamous tale is that of the Leeds Devil, or more commonly referred to as the Jersey Devil. According to legend, the creature was born in 1735, the 13th child of Deborah Leeds, who was the wife of a rival of Benjamin Franklin. One version of the tale states that the father was Satan himself, and that she was a witch who had pledged her soul. However, the most commonly reported version of the tale is that Mrs. Leeds, residing in Estaville, was overwhelmed when she learned that she was expecting a child for the 13th time, and in disgust, she exclaimed, "Let it be the devil!" Upon the child's birth, it was discovered that it was born with leathery wings, a goat's head, and hooves. It promptly flew up the chimney into an adjacent swamp and has been terrorizing the area ever since. Some trace the elements of the Jersey Devil story to a rivalry between the Leeds family and the Quaker population that lived in New Jersey. The rivalry may have gone on to include Benjamin Franklin, who may have been responsible for the start of the tale. Originally, a man named Daniel Leeds came to the colonies in America, settling in Burlington and becoming more and more involved with the Quakers. He worked with one of the first printers to develop an almanac in which there were references to astrology, which angered many in the community who accused him of being involved in occultism. Instead of retracting the information, Leeds doubled down on publishing information relating to German mysticism, as well as, even more horrifying, taking the side of the British against the colonists. Daniel Leeds retired in 1716 and gave the company to his son, Titan Leeds, who continued to publish the mystical almanacs up until Benjamin Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac in 1732. In the 1733 edition, Benjamin Franklin predicted the day that Titan Leeds would die, sparking an intense rivalry between the two until Leeds' death in 1738. Many speculate that Franklin could have started the legend of the Jersey Devil, as it happened that Titan had a brother named Japhet Leeds, who was married to a woman named Deborah, and they both had 12 children. Innumerable stories have circulated describing the actions of the Jersey Devil, such as destroying crops and killing animals, or raiding chicken coops and farms. Joseph Bonaparte, the brother of Napoleon and former King of Spain, supposedly witnessed the creature after he had built a mansion in the Pine Barrens, living there during his exile in 1813. Posses were formed frequently to apprehend it, and at one point as much as $100,000 was offered for its capture, dead or alive. Some of the largest sightings came in 1909 when newspapers published claims by hundreds of people who said that they had had encounters in South Jersey and Philadelphia. The coverage was taken so seriously that many schools in Delaware Valley chose to close and workers stayed home, while vigilante groups combed the countryside in search of the beast. Otherwise reliable people, inclusive of police, government officials, and businessmen, have claimed to witness the creature, and many continue to believe it still haunts the area to this day. Savannah, Georgia has been the location of hundreds of ghost sightings and dozens of haunted houses, called by some the most haunted city in the United States. Of the many prime locations, the most famous may be Bonaventure Cemetery, a labyrinth of haunted trees, tombs, and statues that appear just a little too lifelike. Bonaventure is situated along the Wilmington River and known for its stunningly beautiful oak, dogwood, and magnolia trees. This 150-year-old burial ground is frequently photographed, as well as being made famous for its role on the cover of the best-selling novel, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Among Bonaventure's most famous spectral residents is the ghost of Little Gracie Watson, who passed from pneumonia at 6 years old in 1889. She is said to appear near a life-size statue that was carved in her honor, which, like many of the other statues, is said to move as if they are alive. Guests often leave coins or toys at the base of the statue, and have reported seeing blood stream down the statue's eyes, hearing the sounds of giggling children, or even the sounds of a pack of dogs barking and snarling angrily. Bonaventure is just one of many reportedly haunted cemeteries in this city's rich and often very dark history. The Hampton Lilybridge House was constructed in 1797 and then relocated to its current position, which appears to be on top of a mysterious crypt which has remained unopened. There have reportedly been 26 families over the years that have been unable to deal with the spectral occurrences, and the encounters reportedly involve furniture moving around and doors locking themselves. However, the most notorious haunted house in Savannah may be the Sorrel Weed House, which had a cameo in the 1994 film Forrest Gump. It is purported to be haunted by at least two vengeful apparitions, both the wife and the lover of Francis Sorrel, a shipping merchant and wealthy plantation owner who built the house in the 1840s. Matilda Sorrel, the wife, is said to have plunged to her death upon discovery of her husband's infidelity with Molly, one of the slaves. Several weeks later, Molly was also discovered dead by hanging in an apparent suicide. Visitors have reported dark energy in the house, which involves the feeling of being choked to death. Perhaps much of the energy also emanates from the hundreds of dead soldiers who passed during the Siege of Savannah that was fought in Madison Square, and it is speculated that some may even be buried underneath the house. The specters of Molly and Matilda are still seen frequently. Dark silhouettes are reported walking through the halls, and some have even seen female images reflected in the house mirrors. Molly is seen most frequently in the slave quarters, and this is where the strangling sensation is most often reported. There are also reports of the sounds of lavish social gatherings in the living area of the house that promptly stop when someone approaches. America is not a young land. It is old and dirty and evil, before the settlers, before the Indians. The evil is there, waiting. William S. Burroughs. Identifying the most haunted or cursed locations in the U.S. may be quite the task, as the potentials are so numerous and the history is so dark. However, one of the first primary contenders may be Waverly Hill Sanatorium, first established in 1910 on the edge of Louisville, Kentucky, to treat victims of the White Plague, or tuberculosis, that was ravaging the country. In the early 1900s, Kentucky's warm, wet weather was the perfect breeding ground for tuberculosis, a bacterial, airborne disease that ate away at lung tissue, causing roughly 20% of all deaths in the U.S. by the end of the 1800s. Waverly Sanatorium itself was a wonderful example of early Tudor Gothic Revival-style architecture, originally built as a two-story frame building with a hipped roof and half timbering. It was originally designed to accommodate 40 to 50 tuberculosis patients safely, in a place where they could rest, stay calm, and have plenty of fresh air. But it was soon discovered that more accommodation was needed, thus the construction of the massive Gothic-style building that is seen today. Waverly was a self-contained community, complete with its own zip code, post office, water treatment facility, and farm for raising vegetables and livestock. A trip to Waverly Hills meant that you became a permanent resident on the hill. The construction of the final building began in March 1924 and opened for business on October 20th, 1926, after which it could accommodate at least 400-plus patients and be considered one of the most well-equipped and modern facilities at the time. It served as a tuberculosis hospital until 1961, at which point the discovery of an antibiotic that successfully treated and cured the disease rendered the complex obsolete, at which point it was closed down, quarantined, and renovated. It served in the capacity of a nursing home known as Woodhaven Medical Services from 1962 to 1981, and was closed by the state at the time. Since its closing, several locations on the property have taken their place in the pages of paranormal history. The exact number of deaths on the property contributing to its reputation since its construction has been debated, with a possibly inflated estimate of 50,000, but a more realistic number cited by local historians at around 8,000. The most notable location is the infamous 600-foot body chute that was used covertly to move thousands of corpses through the facility, and many reports of orbs of light, as well as full-bodied apparitions, have been reported here. Picture a long, lonely, dimly lit underground tunnel. The sounds of the squeaking wheels of the hospital gurney and the hefty weight of a recently deceased resident placed on top. It is reasonable to assume that due to the sheer number of deaths, the staff might have been overwhelmed, and in a rush to transfer the bodies to the railroad tracks at the bottom of the hill, might have acted more expeditiously than carefully. Perhaps an overturned gurney or the shock of an untimely death might be the cause of the phantom footsteps, voices, and incidents of being touched or pushed down that dark, final destination. One contributing factor to the high death toll may have been the method in which tuberculosis was addressed at the time. Treatment methodology before the advent of vaccines ranged from benignly worthless to the savage and inhuman. The prescription of fresh air, rest, and sunlight was often carried out during all seasons, including the unforgiving depths of winter, and in a few cases, patients had their lungs collapsed or surgically resected in order to let the organ rest. One of the more benign spirits on the property is said to enjoy a good game of catch. It has been observed by some that if you roll a ball down a long hallway, sometimes a young boy named Timmy will roll the ball back to you. One would assume that this might be a welcome change of pace from the tedium of ghostly existence, or perhaps not having other ghost children in close proximity. An epicenter of still more activity, according to many ghost hunters and thrill seekers, is the fifth floor of the hospital, where patients with severe mental disturbances were purportedly treated. Room 502 in particular, where two nurses are reported to have killed themselves, one by jumping to her death and the other by hanging, draws much attention. Many people have claimed to see mysterious figures staring coldly from the windows, or have heard voices telling them to get out. The doors of Waverly Hill Sanatorium have been closed for more than half a century. However, it seems that not all the occupants have left or welcome new visitors. The Waverly Hills Society has incorporated in 2003 for the purpose of preserving and restoring the sanitarium, memorializing the staff and patients, as well as educating the public about the history of tuberculosis. The Historic Society offers several historical and paranormal themed tours throughout the year, as well as a haunted house attraction at Waverly during the Halloween season. For information, go to www.therealwaverlyhills.com. Well, it seems that the rain has abated for now, and the road should be safe to travel. If you must go, please promise to visit us again soon. Stay in touch with us for frequent updates, more real tales of the supernatural and horrifying, and the chance for you, dear listener, to possibly own a piece of paranormal history. Till we meet again, we will save you a seat in the haunted chair.